Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After on 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Timothy Michael McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Doug LaSalvin Vaughn with you on the radio program. Doug, did you see the Golden Globes last night?
I saw some of it. I did see Meryl Streep. I saw some of it, not a lot of it.
Cat, did you take a gander?
I'm not a big Golden Globes guy. I also didn't want to see actors and actresses weighing in on the political climate, so I passed. Plus, there was a marathon of Finding Bigfoot on last night, Tim, and there was actually an episode, I can't believe it wasn't pointed out to me, a rerun where the Bigfoot researchers went into the woods with Bobcat Goldthwait.
Well, he'll find, if anyone can find Bigfoot, it would be Bobcat.
Bobcat Goldthwait went on a squad. They didn't. You know, they thought they might have heard something, so yes, that proved that that area had Bigfoot.
That area was squatchy.
And it's so bad, and my wife goes, I can't believe you watch this, but it's so bad that they think they heard a Bigfoot howl, but the audio isn't good enough where you can hear it on your TV, so they put the little...
It's a different decibel level.
So they put the little sound chart on your screen so you can tell that there was an actual...
They have like a six-second video clip of a guy in some sort of gorilla suit walking into the woods. That's all the proof I need.
So I didn't see the Golden Globe.
I watched it, Timmy, and I don't know why I subject myself to it every year, because it's just, it gets worse every year. I don't know half these people that win. I don't know half of these movies that win. I think it's just the Hollywood foreign press wants to say, you know, we're going to give it to people that have no shot at winning it. It's like a participation award if you win a Golden Globe. That's just my feeling.
Didn't the O.J. miniseries clean up with awards? That was really good. That was good.
I don't know, other than the girl that played Marcia Clark. I always forget her name. She's the only one that won from O.J.
Yeah, but I think the series won.
I just was looking on the Twitter.
I thought it was somewhat of a cringeworthy moment when Jimmy Fallon was saying, everybody thanks the director and their key grip, but nobody's thanking O.J. for making this possible.
So you did watch it.
I saw bits and pieces of it.
He was doing an impression of Chris Rock.
Yeah, I thought that. I don't know about that.
What did you think of him, Timmy? I thought he was awful, Jimmy Fallon. I don't think he's funny.
The show, I oftentimes enjoy that show, but last night I just thought it was absurdly boring. And usually, Anna Marie and I use the show as an opportunity to then see the movies that are up for the Academy Awards or will be up for the Academy Awards, and then be somewhat educated. Like, for example, I wasn't even aware of Whiplash until the Golden Globes, and then went and saw it, and I thought it was the best movie of that particular year a couple of years ago. And then with La La Land winning, and considering it's a musical, I mean, hey, you know, to each their own.
That's
on that.
Right up your alley.
But that's just not something I want to see. We went to try and see Manchester by the Sea a couple of weeks ago, but it was sold out, and so we went and saw Jackie instead, which wasn't up for anything outside of Natalie Portman for Best Actress. She didn't win. But unlike previous Golden Globes where I am like, oh, good, let's go see, you know, these three or four movies, I have very little interest. I already knew we wanted to see Manchester by the Sea. Moonlight won. I guess I'll look at that. La La Land, I have zero interest in. Thought it was odd. There were a number of shows that I think a lot of people would consider to be some of the best in television history with Game of Thrones. You know, there was a big surge of popularity for Westworld this year. I haven't seen it yet, but I just know a lot of people whose opinion I respect on entertainment consider that to be an outstanding show if you can grind through the first couple episodes. And This Is Us and instead The Crown, which I'm not familiar with. Maybe it's outstanding.
I've seen three episodes and it just bore the hell out of me.
Yeah, I was wondering. That's what I was wondering.
It's about Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth, what, growing up or something along those lines?
Yeah, I guess through the years, the girl who won portraying that, she's going to be the young Queen Elizabeth. And then I guess as you get into her, what is she, like 106 now? So you're going to have to change actresses as they get older, I guess. But I mean, it's just, How many TV shows can you do on Queen Elizabeth 1 and 2? I mean, for that to beat out Game of Thrones is just a travesty to me.
Well, surprised by that. But, I came out of it not really being that enthused about going to see any movies. And I also thought the show was rather boring. But Jimmy Fallon, you know, I mean, hey, man, I recognize there's a great deal of popularity with his show. At least there was out of the gate when it moved in that time slot. For me, it's just, I don't get it. But I know these days the hosts gear their material on those late night talk shows towards the digital platform and doing like bits that then can draw traffic and therefore revenue throughout the course of the day. And what I grew up on with Letterman specifically is kind of antiquated. So Fallon laughing at everything and saying everyone is the best is just not necessarily my vibe. Colbert really doesn't do it for me in that role. And I really like Jimmy Kimmel, actually. Who's the dude who does the hack karaoke thing?
Corden? James Corden.
Right.
I like him. He's funny.
So, you know, those just not the same deal. So anyway, I wasn't looking forward to it because of Fallon, but I thought maybe it'll be pretty good. But then, you know, the show was just kind of boring.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I get it. It's on NBC, so you're going to use Fallon. I get that. But it's just, I mean, you're just stealing your opening act from what Billy Crystal did every year with the Academy Awards, just putting a bunch of stars out there and dancing around. And we get it. Your buddies with Justin Timberlake, we get it. I don't know what he was doing there. But the monologue wasn't, and he just disappeared.
Yeah,
after the monologue, it's just nothing.
Whereas with like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, you know, they're a big part of the show.
Yeah, and they're funny.
Didn't the teleprompter break down on him too?
That's what he said. We have audio of that. He goes out there, and away they go, and here's how it sounded.
Welcome to the Golden Globes. Already the teleprompter's down, so this is a great way to start the show. I can do impressions. What do we do here? I can think of something. Cut to Justin Timberlake, please, and then he'll do. So just wink at me or something. Yeah. Yeah, this is great. We have another monitor coming in. I could just, you know what? I'll make up this monologue.
Hmm. Well, you did.
Doug, you've been
there.
Well,
live TV.
Doug, you've been there.
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't. I've never hosted the Golden Globe Awards.
No, well, the prompter goes down.
Yeah.
And you know what you
but
do?
But not exactly in front of millions of people.
Well, on a nightly basis, you're in front of dozens. And if the prompter goes down, you know what you do? You pull yourself up by the bootstraps and you talk about that Fenton North video that you just ruled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of texts saying Hell or High Water is the best movie of the year. A large number of texts, actually.
That's about the brothers fighting against like the guy trying to take their land or something. I think I have it on my phone that I never got a chance to watch. And it ticks me off because I've heard good things about it.
I think that's Jeff Bridges as the sheriff and the two brothers trying to get their farm back so they start robbing banks, I think.
Butch Patrick's Werewolf Doll says The Crown is great.
Well, maybe I need to give it more time. 3 episodes, I was just bored of your boy John Lithgow playing Winston Churchill.
My boy?
Well, I'm sorry, the fan page thinks you look like John Lithgow.
Yeah, I've heard that many times. It doesn't make him my boy.
Manchester by the Sea, so damn dark and depressing. Be prepared, Timmy. It's from Craig, the CPA.
Yeah, I've heard that.
My wife got a copy of that, and we were going to watch it, and then I looked it up, and it was over the holidays. Yeah. I don't really need to be depressed, you know, right before New Year's.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I want to see Hacksaw Ridge. I haven't seen that. I like a good war picture.
Yeah, I'd like to see that as well.
Hacksaw Ridge is
Vince Vaughn. Right? Isn't he involved in that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Isn't that Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson.
No. I believe it was.
And the red carpet show is really good, too. I mean, when you want to get in-depth interviews with celebrities, you put Al Roker out there, who interviewed Mel Gibson. Mel, how has directing changed in the last 20 years between Hacksaw Ridge and the movie you did? I'm drawing a blank. It's Braveheart, you moron.
Okay, easy.
They're all bad.
You were upset with the Golden Globe.
I actually tweeted 3 times last night during it. That's like 3 times more than I've tweeted in the last month.
What'd you have to say?
Just how bad it was.
Was Jackie good, Tim? My lady wants to see it. I don't know. I was not alive, and I would imagine the vast majority of our audience was not alive, you know, during the Camelot era. But Natalie Portman, who I'm a huge fan of, and I remember seeing her for the first time in 1995 in the film Beautiful Girls, and you could just tell right away, like, just superstar talent. I felt like her portrayal of Jackie Kennedy was almost like a caricature. It seemed to be over the top, but then at the same time, I'm referencing absolutely nothing, so I don't. That's why it's not fair. And also, Natalie Portman's an outstanding actress, so I would imagine that, you know, there was an absurd amount of study going into the portrayal of Jackie Kennedy. It just seemed like it was almost like a Saturday Night Live impression of Jackie Kennedy. It struck me as opposed, but I wasn't around for Jackie Kennedy's, you know, time in the spotlight, so I don't know.
What, did she talk with a real affected voice?
Yes.
That's kind of how Jackie Kennedy talked.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I like Tom. What's Tom Cruise's ex-wife's name? She was on Ray Donovan. Katie Holmes. Her portrayal of Jackie in the miniseries I thought was spot on. She didn't try to imitation of Jackie. She did a very good job of playing Jackie O in that miniseries. I did not see Natalie Portman's portrayal.
Tim, was she wearing Doug's sunglasses?
Oh, yeah.
Steve and Wildwood. I just won text of the day.
Oh, we did.
Roast beef sandwich at Lion's Choice.
Yeah, I had some Jackie O-style sunglasses on at the Wiffle Ball tournament.
Does anybody know who Isabella Kubert is in the movie L?
Oh, no. Is he? Sure.
Anybody familiar with that?
No, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, well, she won Best Actress. I just tweeted, Isabel Hubbard, L, who are these people?
Does that mean we're getting old when we don't know who some of the leading actors and actresses are?
I guarantee you, 90% of the people in the audience didn't know who she was. They were too drunk anyway, but...
Mm.
Yeah, they must start drinking really early out there because that show starts at 5.
They start at like 2.
And then people go up on the stage to, they come back from commercial break.
Nobody's listening.
Sounds like the late night scores broadcasting.
I feel bad for the people that have to go up right after the break because nobody's listening. They're all still talking. They're all standing around drinking and talking. And
it looked like it was kind of a small venue where the people at the tables, they were right up on you.
It's the same venue every time.
But yeah, that adds to some of the noise, I guess.
Tim, what are your thoughts on Conan O'Brien? Thanks. That's from Potent Potable. I don't know what that's in reference to.
You didn't,
is that a reference to that he might go down to 1 week?
No, you were talking about the late show host that you don't like.
Oh, I see.
I like him.
I feel like that is a great movie being, or a book waiting to be done, because he went from the absolute summit in that industry to now, I saw on Friday, that's what I thought maybe the text was in reference to, they might cut his show back to one time a week.
And pretending like it's a good thing. Yeah. They said, I saw the quote because I'm a Conan fan, but it's almost like, he's on sabbatical while he's on TBS, but they said, no, we got a lot of great numbers when he does shows from live venues and events.
Right.
So that's almost like saying, yeah, it's not working, but they try to, you know, make it seem like this is a good, positive step.
TBS is hard to find. You know, I got to really want to watch it. I got to really go searching to find the channel.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that maybe the issue for some, I just think the show is just so bad, and he is, right or wrong, I think his brand, official 2017 term, is damaged by what took place, that the cachet of it's kind of, you're on the in crowd, if you get Conan, it's not cool anymore, so... It's just kind of floating along in obscurity on TBS, you know?
I always thought he was funny. I just feel like he was exiled to TBS. For some reason, I just never think about watching him.
Yeah. I'll see his guest list, and I'm like, oh, my God.
It's not good?
Ugh.
I've never laughed once at his show. Never once have I even grinned during his show.
I mean, when he first went on, people were like, this is a joke, right? This guy? And then he won a lot of people over. Maybe it is that pack mentality that, you know, suddenly if you do like him, then you must be funny and cool. But I always liked him.
Yeah, I liked him. Who did he lose out to? That wasn't Jay Leno. Who did he get bounced out by?
Jay Leno.
It was Jay Leno. Back, yeah.
Have you ever walked out of a theater because the movie's so bad? That's from Recaps. I almost did that with Gosford Park, which was up for Best Picture in 01, if I'm not mistaken. Thought that was horrible.
I walked out of one once that I snuck into. We used to sneak into movies all the time in college. Yeah. We snuck into the Esquire Theater, and we couldn't get in. I forget the movie we wanted to see. So we went into one of the other movies, and it was just starting. It was Zero Mostel in a movie called Rhinoceros. We had never heard of it. It was the most god-awful thing I've ever seen in my life. And even having not paid for it, we still walked down. It
won 3 Oscars.
It didn't.
All right, I made that up. I was a kid, and any movie was fine, and I don't remember who took me, but to see Barbra Streisand on a clear day, and I was acting up so much that the whole family left because it was so awful. Babs.
Because you were acting up?
Yeah, I was like, this. I can't sit here anymore. And they were like, shut up, you'll be grounded. And I was like, I'm going to leave. I forget how old I was. I must have been a small child. And I acted up so much that we just left. And I was the black sheep for a while.
Yeah, I imagine you were. The Penguin wasn't acting up, was he?
No, he liked Babs. He liked Babs. I just remember it was awful. It was like I was in a prison for 2 hours.
Anyone see Natalie Portman's face? What the hell did she do to it? It's from the 314.
What happened?
I didn't notice anything outside of it. Still looked like she was kind of in character. Like she had kind of the Jackie Kennedy lid going last night, and also kind of a 1960s yellow color. And then like the split second I saw her when they announced the nominations for Best Actress, I didn't notice anything. I think she just had a baby, or she is pregnant, one or the other. So I don't know on that. She's absurdly beautiful.
You mentioned Beautiful Girls. That's one of those movies, if it's on, I'll watch it.
Yeah. Amen.
Really good, but not a lot of people.
1995, Jackie Papers.
Great cast in there.
I wonder how old Natalie Portman is. What do you think? I'm going to go 35, give or take a year.
I'm going to say a little older.
Yeah, I was going to go 36, 37.
Yeah, I was going to go 36.
I'm going to go 38, 38.
But there's this phenomenon right now with younger women getting plastic surgery, and I would put mid-30s is on that spectrum, on the older side of it, like women in their 20s, and I just don't know what the hell's going on. Hey, to each their own. Makes them feel better. It's their bodies. God bless.
What do you mean? Nose jobs? Boob jobs? That kind of thing?
The lip thing is blatant. Is it the eye thing. It's just...
I don't understand the fish lip look. Why you would want to look like a smallmouth bass.
Of those smallmouth bass are quite attractive.
I mean, I was looking into getting hair transplants, and I was like in my late 20s, so I can't fade anybody for wanting to make themselves feel better by what they think makes them look better. But I'm just confused as to... the direction plastic surgeons are leading some of these young ladies as to what is deemed aesthetically pleasing. It's very odd, much less to get it done in like your 20s. But hey, to each their own, man.
I got a chin chisel. Can you see?
Yeah, I can tell.
You look kind of like Kirk Douglas.
Yeah. It was like a 2-hour procedure.
Just to get a little chisel there in the chin work?
Yeah, they scrape and they caulk. The next thing you know, you look like Kirk.
Yeah, I haven't had any work done yet. You're probably surprised by that. When you look at me, you think, no, you must have had work done. No, nothing. Double root canal. Had to go for the second sitting last week. It was just as bad as the first.
I had a root canal the same day you did.
Yeah. Did it hurt at all?
No, I guess.
Oh, that's right. Mine didn't hurt, but it's still.
From now on.
Sawing and scissoring and drilling.
Yeah, I don't want to know about it. From now on. When I go to the dentist for something serious, they're going to meet me at my car. As soon as I get out of the car, they're slapping a mask on me.
Some guy comes from behind. No. You feel like you're being kidnapped.
Yep.
He's out now.
His career was much like his bit in the year 2000. At first glance, you were confused. Then it was funny, and eventually time passed it by. Doug.
Is that Conan they're talking about?
I don't know. I felt like we were kind of playing a riddle and had to guess who we were.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah, I think that's what that's in reference to. I think he's what he's making reference to.
It also could be Adrian's Med.
One of the greats.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the wax statue of Sly Stallone with Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
That's from Mrs. Jenny Shanahan.
Yeah, he's had some work. His daughters were attractive, though.
Who?
Sly.
Sly. He was up there last
night. We just call him Sly.
Give him some credit, though. He's an old guy.
Hey, Apollo, I shouldn't have let you win that fight, man. I wrote it.
That was a terrible...
I believe it's been
that
40
sounded
years.
Like a Muppet. That was terrible.
I kind of enjoyed it, actually.
The big lips and the huge fake asses slash thighs do nothing for me. That's from Butch Patrick's Werewolf.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Butch.
Now, Tim, Natalie Portman, granted, fantastic and beautiful. If you look at her from 2010 to 17 or 16, there is a downgrade in her face. I know that's of age, but it seems like the plastic surgery isn't going.
You think it's plastic surgery?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
How old is she?
35. So
of course Timmy's right.
Clip that off.
A downgrade in her face.
Uh-oh, thorough lemming list, but he's already on there.
I don't know why he said 36 or 37. I should have just said 35 is correct.
Yeah, I didn't know that one. I was just spitballing on that.
Boy, she was good in that Beautiful Girl.
She was.
She was unbelievable.
You knew right then and there. She's like Millie Bobby Brown in Stranger Things. Anybody seen Stranger Things, by the way, Winona Ryder?
No.
No.
It's a Netflix series. Seamaster has seen it. Millie Bobby Brown, you're just like, that girl's going to be a superstar. And you thought the same thing when you saw Natalie Portman. You're just like, that's sick, sick talent. Yeah, the big lips and huge fake ass. I guess women are getting these ass injections or surgeries where they get implants in their asses.
That's the real puzzler.
Don't you like the thing?
Yeah, I don't get that at all. Why you want to look fat? I don't know.
I said to Kate, and I said, you know, I noticed all of the girls in Stag now have huge asses, but nobody ever really, like when women were getting breast implants, it was just kind of cat. You would talk about it, but this nobody's talking about. And she goes, yeah, I guess just everybody's doing it and it's like part of the secret, so everybody's not saying anything about it. This is so blatantly obvious.
Who decided that was the thing?
Like there are some where you can see the scars from the surgery.
God bless it.
It's like, that's a little distracting.
I would imagine Kim
I'll fast forward 20 seconds.
Right, Kim Kardashian's popularity.
You don't think that's natural?
Well, I don't. I'm just saying that physique. She became very popular. So
I don't think it's real because even the Jenner girls now have those big asses, and they're not in the Kardashian clan. They're from a different father.
You know.
Well, they openly say they have their butts injected, and on the show you can actually see them.
Oh, really? Is that
on
right?
occasion
so
going
injections?
To? Yeah, I think it's to like bubble it and form it as such to where
like
obviously
Play-Doh, like bubble. You can do it yourself.
No, I'm not for sure how the process works, but I know Khloe and Kim in I think a season a couple years ago, it was the first time that they showed Kim getting her butt taken care of.
Mm. I mean, you see Kylie Jenner's ass lately?
No,
Doug,
it's beautiful,
huge.
You could just do that with a lot of French fries or maybe sandwiches with extra mayo.
Yeah, that used to be the exact opposite of what you wanted.
Well, if you keep the stomach flat and have it, that's like the thing right now. And I think I talked about this on the air within the last couple of months. I was listening to Cindy Crawford on with Marc Maron on his podcast, and she said when she was coming up in the 1990s, the whole thing was being as thin as possible. And then the modeling industry was critiqued for that. The heroin chic look of Kate Moss, one of the most extreme examples. And now Cindy Crawford has, you know, children, a daughter who I think may be a model herself. And it's a weird spot because the girls come home and they cry because their asses aren't big enough.
Yeah, I don't get it. I do not get it. Of course, I didn't get Kate Moss either.
Yeah, I never got that one.
I've never looked at Kate Moss in a picture and say, boy, there's an attractive woman. Never, not once.
Timmy, the executive producer of La La Land, is a U-High grad. His name is Michael Bugue. I've met Michael Bugue before. He also was the executive producer of Up in the Air. Remember when that was shot in St. Louis 8 years ago with George Clooney?
Mm-hmm.
Who else was in that? Vera Farmiga, who's beautiful, uniquely beautiful. Kind of looks like adult film star Julia Ann to me, Iggy.
Julie Andrews?
No.
Julie Andrews wasn't in that picture.
Hills are alive with the sound of music. La, 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 la.
Natalie, a 120-pound AM radio co-producer / board op in St. Louis thinks your face has been downgraded. Can I get a comment? That comes from Not Fuelsy.
I didn't say she wasn't attractive, nor would I date or bang her, because I would in two milliseconds.
Easy,
but
though.
I'm just saying, if you look at the picture from 2010 to 2016, there's a significant downgrade.
We could probably all say that.
Her body is still banging. I'm not talking about her body. I'm just talking about her facial features, and her facial structure is different. Sorry.
From Anna surgery. Kendrick was also an up in the air. She was cute as a button. That's from Stubby Applause.
Was she?
Yeah, she was cute last night, too.
I feel like I'm missing another really obvious... Oh, Jason Bateman was in that. The guy from Whiplash, who... What's his name? He won Best Actor.
J.K. Simmons?
Yes. He was in it as well. And they shot that all around, like, downtown St. Louis, yeah. And then also at the Hilton out... by Lambert.
There were some.
I went out there and actually watched them. Shoot, we were invited to go to the set, and I saw Clooney and Vera with that scene that was one of the early scenes where they first meet in the bar.
And he spent
a lot of time playing basketball. Yeah. He was playing basketball, working out. I guess they were staying at the Four Seasons.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time at Napoli, from what I hear.
I saw him at Miso one night. May it rest in peace. They'll give her pony up at Miso.
Was that in Clayton?
Yes, indeed.
Apparently he had an incident raising canes. Where they charge him for one of the sauces.
Oh, did they? And he wouldn't hear that. Yeah. Drive-through?
The director of La La Land also directed Whiplash. Yeah, I saw that. That guy seems like he's in his early 30s at most. I'm going, my God.
I think he wrote the screenplay for that, too.
Ooh, Wunderkind.
Yeah, Wunderkind, indeed. I loved Whiplash. I just can't imagine going, yeah, Anna Marie, let's go see a musical.
Yeah. The musicals died out, but then I guess like the show Glee was popular. Isn't that a show where they break into tune?
Yeah. From the 314, Real White Boy Radio. Oh, this is the guy who, now I don't know what this means. I don't know how this is White Boy Radio, but this is the guy who got so angry in the text inbox that he promised that he wouldn't text in anymore, Doug, and now he's back.
Who is he?
I don't know.
Well, what's his
name?
I don't
know his name, but I don't know. Maybe he's not a fan of the whites, LOL.
If you really hated something, why would you continue to listen to it?
Well, the texting, he admitted he gets a little too angry, and now he's back. You never know.
What are we portraying ourselves? Real? We happen to be a group of Caucasian men. Some would argue none whiter. So what are we supposed to do?
I don't know what was said in that previous 5 minutes that was unique to those of European Caucasian descent.
Hmm. I don't either.
We were talking about large cabooses. Maybe that's...
I like the big asses if the stomach is flat.
On guys?
Yes. John Kelly is with us here.
Oh, God, poor guy.
On the appliance discounter phone lines. Morning, John.
What in the heck are you guys talking about?
We don't know.
Clip that off.
It's been a rough morning, John.
John, I don't know. Week plus in really 9 days in Blues hockey history. I think it'll be something people will be talking about 10, 20 years from now. And it closed out yesterday at Busch Stadium, but in between with the alumni game, the Winter Classic, of course, but then also a very good win on Saturday night and the skills competition. And then you had Team Stillman against Team DeWitt yesterday. Just a great 9 days in Blues organization history. What would be, when you think back on those 9 days, the moment that you saw, perhaps we didn't get to see, that would stand out most for you if somebody asked you about it 10 years from now?
Well, first of all, Tim, I think it was a home run. It was a great couple of weeks of celebration of the game of hockey and the Blues and their 50-year history. But for me personally, I got a chance to broadcast the alumni game and to walk into the locker room the morning of the game and to, you know, stop at the locker stalls of the likes of Al MacInnis and Gretzky and, of course, Bernie and Brett Hall. I mean, it's like you're almost like a kid again, you know, walking in through a candy store. I mean, these guys are the greatest of the greats, not just necessarily as far as the Blues are concerned, but in the history of the NHL, and to do the game and to sit up there on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and the temperature was close to 60, and to look out over the beautiful Busch Stadium. And then the game itself on Monday, the big game, of course, the Blues played really well and won 4-1. But for me, the highlight probably was, during those hours of the alumni game when, you know, a lot of those guys were my heroes and guys I still look up to, and those were the biggest moments for me that weekend.
You know what stuck out to me is reading the comments or hearing the comments from folks that aren't based in St. Louis about how impressed they were, not only with the crowd at the Winter Classic, which was a no-brainer, I knew that, but the crowd at the alumni game and the way that St. Louis embraced the whole weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that really struck me, Jim, is that, you know, at the alumni game, you know, every ticket was sold. It was basically a two-for-one deal. But, you know, there really were no empty seats in Busch Stadium. So, you know, I think the fans were just about as excited for that game as they were for the real game on Monday. So, you know, that just goes to show, you know, their knowledge of the game and the history of the St. Louis Blues and a chance to see these stars for perhaps the last time. I mean, I know a guy like, you know, Bernie Federico says, I'm done. I'm not going to play anymore. You know, he's over 60 years old, and who knows if a guy like Gretzky will ever play in an alumni game again. So I think it was a chance to perhaps for one final time to say goodbye to all these great players because we're not sure if we'll ever see them, you know, on the ice again. Certainly probably not again at Busch Stadium unless they get an outdoor game in the near future. But, you know, that's probably not likely in the next couple of years.
Darren Pang said yesterday he was going to burn his pads. He played pretty well. He looked like he really had a great time.
You know what, Doug? He played well, and he also, you know, sort of did double duty. He was mic'd up on our broadcast, and, you know, literally we're talking to him about the game, and he says, hold on, John, and Gretzky's coming down the slot on him. So, you know, I know Darren's really glib and can talk rather easily, but to do that and also make saves and concentrate, and, you know, don't forget, here's a guy that a year ago had full knee replacement surgery. So, you know, he's dealing with that and worried about perhaps getting hurt and also did a great job on the broadcast. So, but I thought all the goalies were really good. Mike Liut and Stanowski, and then Brodeur comes in the third period, and even the Hawk goalies were great. So I think that was probably the biggest take I took from that game was that these goalies, although a lot of them are, you know, now in their 50s and 60s, they're still pretty good athletes.
You know, J.K., Bernie did score a goal, a beautiful one, as he went down but was still able to find the net. But watching that whole celebration and the love for Bernie Federico, we get to work with that guy, and he's such a humble person. You almost forget how great he was and how beloved he is because we see him every day as just a guy that I sit in the little green room with and watch the Blues games.
You know, you're really right, Jim. I mean, that probably is the biggest thing I take away from knowing Bernie and being around Bernie. He is such a humble person. And, you know, he was a great player. I mean, he played 1,000 games. He's in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, we all know that Wayne Gretzky was the greatest player ever. And he really made his mark, you know, with his passing abilities. And people think that he was the first one to go behind the net and make plays from behind the net. But that's not really true. Federico was doing that in the mid-70s before Gretzky came along. I can't count the number of times that I saw Bernie Federico behind the net and Brian Sutter was right in the goal crease and he put the puck right on his tape and he just jammed it in. He had to have hundreds of assists from behind the net and a lot of them to Brian Sutter.
John, do you think the success of this might have helped the Blues gain some new fans, expand the fan base a little? It seemed like everybody got into this, whether they were hardcore hockey fans or not.
You know, I would think so, Doug. You know, the anticipation for the game was through the roof, and it delivered. It was a fantastic couple of weeks. And, you know, coupled that with the Blues' playoff run last spring when they went to the third round, I don't think I've ever seen more interest in the Blues hockey team than I did last April and May when they were, you know, beating Chicago and then Dallas and playing San Jose. So, you know, and then there was so much anticipation for the Winter Classic and the alumni game. Yeah, there's no question that I think right now as we sit here on, you know, January the 9th or whatever it is, 2017, I'm not sure if the Blues have ever had a bigger impact in the St. Louis sports market than they are having right now.
Well, Saturday, the Blues got a much-needed win against the Stars. Berglund scores one late. Dallas played pretty well in that game, but to me, that was a game that the Blues had to have. And I know, you know, it's easy to say must-win game, but the Blues have had trouble stringing together consecutive wins, and, you know, they're looking to make a move, and for whatever reason, it seems like they're spinning their wheels a little bit.
Yeah, as you said, they haven't won back-to-back games since late November. And, you know, I felt that the game Saturday was almost a mirror image of the game on Thursday when they lost to the Carolina Hurricanes 4-2. Both games were tied in the third period. It was pretty even down the stretch. The Canes got a power play goal, a bit of a break when the shot by Skinner hit the skate of Jay Bouwmeester. And then in Saturday's game, again, it's tied. And the Blues, you know, they got outshot 11-5 in the third period, Jim. And Berglund, as you said, gets the goal on a great play, a great read by Shattenkirk. So, you know, I guess it's justice that the Blues got one win out of the two, because both games really could have gone either way. And as you said, the Blues really needed that. Now they're 7 games over .500 with David Backes and the Bruins coming to town tomorrow, and then the Blues go on the road to the West Coast starting Thursday in Los Angeles.
John, would you expect Doug Armstrong to tinker with the team much the rest of the way? You think they've got the roster that they want right now to make a long run, or will it require changes?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, obviously, you know, Doug has been fairly active in the trade market the last, you know, really since he came on board. I certainly wouldn't rule anything out, Doug. But having said that, it's really hard to make trades in today's NHL. I'm not sure if there's really been one significant trade all year long. And you read so much in the newspapers and online every day. I mean, teams that are struggling, a team like the Colorado Avalanche and their general manager, Joe Sakic, can't make a trade. And he said basically that everybody's available except Nathan MacKinnon. So even though Doug might want to make a deal or, you know, upgrade a certain area of his hockey club, it's just really hard because nowadays, as we all know, with the salary cap, it's basically, you know, dollar out, dollar in. So having said all that, I think there's a decent chance that something could happen before the trade deadline, but your guess is as good as mine about what it could be and when it might happen.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot with Shattenkirk because they don't want him to leave at the end of the year. And right now he's playing really, really well. So they have to weigh, you know, do we need this guy if we want to make a push, or do we look into the future and think we have to get something in return? I think it's a tough spot to be in.
You know, you hit the nail on the head, Jim, because, you know, he's playing so well. And, you know, I know the Blues feel they have a good team, but we'll see what happens in the next, you know, 8 weeks or so with this club. And do they gel? Do they come together? Do they make a run at first place? Or conversely, they could fall off. I don't think that's going to happen. I really think this is a playoff team, but it's a tough decision. I mean, a year ago, both David Backes and Troy Brouwer leave the Blues, so they don't get, you know, compensation from those guys. And Shattenkirk's a big part of the puzzle, and he's a significant player. So I think it's a really tough decision that Doug Armstrong does have to make to re-sign him. And, you know, I don't know what their finances are down the stretch as far as fitting him into the cap. You know, we know Parayko is a really good player, and his contract is up in another year. So, you know, it's a big puzzle. And, you know, can they make a new contract with Shattenkirk fit into the puzzle, not just next year, but, you know, down the road? So those are tough decisions, but that's why they pay Doug Armstrong the money he gets paid, to make those hard decisions.
And they hit the halfway mark of the season tomorrow night. Is this about where you thought they'd be right now? Are they playing up to what you thought the caliber team that they would be?
You know what, Doug? You know, they're 7 games over .500 in a very competitive division. And they've had, as we know, so they've had a lot of change this year. You know, I think that's about where I thought they would be, because you have leaders walk out the door, and then you have to have some of the players that are on the club, you know, fill those roles. And it's not easy, and it's a really hard league. So I think overall that, you know, considering that the Blues have had some injuries like a lot of teams, and they've been inconsistent, at times their play in third periods hasn't been what they've wanted. You know, I think to be 7 games over .500, I think that's pretty good. They're in a good position. Now, having said all that, guys, you know, the Blues have a ton of road games to go. In the calendar year, starting on January 1st, the Blues had 25 of their last 45 games on the road, and now they've played, what, 4 games here in the new year, or 3 games in the new year. So, you know, that's the one thing that you have to keep in mind. Even though the Blues are in pretty good shape right now, they have all these road games coming up, especially in the month of March and early April, and that could be a challenge down the stretch in the last 5 or 6 weeks.
John Kelly, our guest on the Appliance Discounter phone lines, talking Blues hockey here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. John, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, Tim, thank you.
See you, John.
John Kelly with us on the program, Blues and Bruins, tomorrow night.
He's another great guy to work with. Center. John Kelly's the best. I'm glad he got to call the alumni game. He's just remarkable. He's great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we will look back at that alumni team as perhaps the greatest team ever on ice, on paper. you know, obviously they're not playing their hardest right now, but to put that number of Hall of Famers, guys just right at the very top in the history of the league. I'm not sure we'll ever see that again.
I don't think it can be topped.
2002 Red Wings, while they were out there, might have been, as weird as that is, we're talking about that team with Chase and Hall. We did a Q&A last year since Hall was on that team. And you go through that roster, the Blues lost to them in five games, if I'm not mistaken, in the second round of 2002. And you go through that roster, you go, my God, that wasn't an all-time Detroit Red Wings team. That was just a team at that particular moment that were all playing together, and it's just stacked. With no grocery sticks, actually. That's exactly what I was about to say, with no grocery sticks.
You can't have too many of those on your roster.
You will pay the piper?
Yeah.
It's going to be tough for the Blues to catch the Blackhawks. 10 points back. Granted, there's 40-plus games remaining, but Blackhawks look like they may be in a different world, and they're trailing the Wild right now for the second spot.
And the Wild looks
Central. Yeah. Wild and Blue Jackets, Stanley Cup Final, as Doug predicted.
I hadn't predicted that at all. The Blues have got to be careful. They're not that far away from being out of the playoff spot right now. They're closer to that than catching the Hawks.
It's been win, loss, win. I mean, they just can't get a little run put together, create a little space.
Well, their goaltending hasn't been outstanding.
Hold the netminders accountable.
Well, I was looking at the stats the other night, and Jake Allen ranked like 29th or so in goals against average, and Hutton was like 47th.
What about save percentage? What about save percentage?
That's 47th in save percentage. It hadn't been great. Now, whether that's the defense giving up too many easy looks or whether that's goaltending problems, it's something. Their defense hasn't really been that good.
I think Jake's been very solid. And I do think some of it goes on the defense. I mean, there are times he just faces an onslaught. But I think he'll
have to clean that up.
How do you do that?
Well, you hold people accountable, hold some feet to the fire, that sort of thing. Maybe drill them in practice. Just drill them.
What do you mean drill them?
Just drill them. You know, hockey drills.
Like what? How do you?
Stick handling drills,
That's the
puck
problem?
Puck handling drills.
That'll improve the defense, stick handling?
Skate backwards. Your own defense. Let's do some backward skating today.
How about clean guys away from the crease?
Clean the garbage out of the case. Huh? Yeah, that's another drill.
Doug, the Hawks have played three more games. Thanks. It's from the 3-1-4.
Yeah. Okay.
That means the Blues have games in hand.
Games in hand.
Now, baseball, you always talked about run differential. But in hockey, you never bring up goal differential. Is there a reason? Because you haven't once brought up.
It's probably so far over your understanding of the game that I don't even go there.
Do you separate ENs?
I would never separate an E and an N.
Which is more important, run differential or goal differential? Because the Blues are actually -4.
Yeah.
So is that important?
It's crucial. It's crucial. But as I said, I try to dumb down some of my knowledge
I wrote down the equation. You take power play minutes and divide it by odd man rushes allowed, and that will give you goal difference.
It's similar. It's not it exactly, but keep trying. No, I don't even want to delve into it because I'm afraid I might lose you.
Plus, the app that you have doesn't chart that right there.
Well, not this one.
Yeah.
No. I wouldn't need it. I could probably do the math in my head.
But right, what's the Blues goal differential?
I think it's a -4.
Oh, good. All right. So you do know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doug, did you watch any of the golf at Kapalua this weekend?
I didn't. I saw it up on one of the TVs at Channel 4. It looked like a fabulous setting.
Kapalua.
It looked like a gorgeous place, but I didn't actually watch it. I'm not much interested in it right now. Did you watch it?
I actually did watch some of it as I'm back on this golf resurgence thing. Justin Thomas won. I realize he's not a mainstream name, but the reason I bring that up is because that Hideki Matsuyama was going to win again.
Was he?
Yeah, and he finished a couple strokes off, and the only person he's lost to over the last 5 months is Justin Thomas twice. Other than that, he's won every event he's played in.
Oh, this fella's a snootful.
And he's only like 23 or 24. So
Hideki Matsui,
actually. He used to be with the Yankees, had a nice 2009 World Series, and
Home
now
Godzilla.
He is like Benjamin Button, and he is 20 years younger, and he's killing the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy did an extensive interview with the Irish Independent, which is the name of a paper, not a rogue drunkard. And he said he wouldn't adopt Tiger Woods' lifestyle, even if it meant enjoying Tiger Woods' success. Quote, I've seen what life is like for him in Florida. I've played golf with him and said, what are you doing tonight? Do you want to come and have dinner with us? And he can't. He just can't. And for me, that's unfathomable. I could not live like that. If someone was to say you can have 14 majors and 70 wins, but have to deal with that, or 9 majors and 40 wins and stay somewhat the same as you are, I'd take the second option all day. McIlroy cited Woods' insomnia, which he thinks is a byproduct of Woods' rigorous workout schedule, as just one way the 14-time major winner's competitive fires burn too hot. He's an intriguing character because you could spend 2 hours in his company and see four different sides to him. When he's comfortable and he trusts you and his trust sensitivity is way higher than mine, he's great. He's thoughtful. He's smart. He reads. He can't sleep, so that's all he does. He reads stuff and educates himself on everything, but he struggles to sleep, which I think is an effect of overtraining, so I tell him to calm down sometimes. He'd be texting me at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm uplifting. What are you doing tonight?
I had that problem, as you know.
You would be when uplifting
was,
at 4 in the
morning. When I was bodybuilding. Yeah, when I was bodybuilding. Yeah, right in the middle of that string of Mr. Olympia titles that I won after Arnold retired. I had a little trouble sleeping at night.
I remember you texted me.
It gets the blood pumping so much that you get your mind racing.
You would text me, it's a glute day, Jim.
Right. I was just so darn big, I barely fit in the bed. I had to stop throwing around quite so much iron. And clearly, this is part of Tiger's issues. I suppose it would be hard to be Tiger Woods and just walk into a restaurant and have people leave you alone.
I guess that's what he was talking about by lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
And he couldn't go have dinner because it would be a whole thing.
He goes to that place, which is close to where we stay at spring training, which is called The Woods. Are you aware of that? I feel like which is just a little east of where the Cardinals play, Roger Dean Stadium, and he'll hang out up there. But
that's a restaurant.
Yeah, it's a restaurant / bar.
The Woods. Well, why wouldn't you? If your name is Tiger Woods,
that's right.
You were able to pick up on that.
Does he own it?
I believe he does have equity in the property.
Oh, that's
but Michael
good.
Jordan.
So then the name makes
go
sense.
Up there. Yes, it does. It does. I didn't know about that insomnia thing. That's got to be brutal.
Maybe he's got sleep apnea.
Think so? Doesn't necessarily look like a candidate for sleep apnea.
Maybe you put down the phone at 4 a.m. and then you can
stop
sleep a little bit better.
Life.
Yeah. You think someone else is going to be up at 4 and respond to your text?
We're up doing show prep, but other than that.
Oh, knock it off.
I'll take his text.
Sometimes we'll get a text from Seymour with the show rundown.
At 4. That's who
5.
We can text.
Mm-hmm. But then sometimes some of the participants in this program, in our ensemble cast, don't read it.
Right.
I do.
Well, I would say maybe give Tiger Seymour's number so that they can text together at 4Z.
Doug Tiger's playing in the Honda Classic. We'll be at spring training while the Honda Classic's going on. You want to go down there
really?
And hang out and watch Eldrick play?
That would be fun. Yeah.
Let's do it then.
That'd be fun.
I thought we couldn't
right
do it that same week because of the room situation.
We might not be staying at PGA, but that is the Cardinals are only, and I thought they were going to start earlier this year because of that magical World Baseball Classic that everybody's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But they're starting around the same date as normal. And so there are only 2 weeks, but really only one full week where the team is working out as a whole before they start playing games. And once they start playing games,
We got nothing
because we're not allowed to set up shop at the picnic table.
Right.
So we had two options, the week where the pitchers and catchers are there, but the players don't have to report until Friday, or the following week, which happens to be the week of the Honda Classic, which is certainly not ideal, but that is that's what we got. So we probably won't be staying at PGA this year. Taking clients down there the following weekend, but I don't think we'll be staying at PGA. I'm trying to make that work, but the rates will be sick. But I've never gone to that. That tournament's really become like a huge tournament.
It's a fun tournament.
I mean, they get the biggest names now. It used to kind of just be like a, you know, whatever. But now they get the biggest names because a lot of those guys live right around there.
Yeah, probably the first golf interviews I ever did was at the Honda. I was down there for spring training, but I was also producing Fairways and Greens with Jay and Smitty. And Jay said, why don't you get over to Honda, see if you can get some interviews. So I did. I stood by the putting green, and I got Aaron Baddeley and Jim Furyk.
Bads, they call them.
Probably the first two interviews I ever did for the golf show.
And how did it go for you?
I didn't know much about Aaron Baddeley. I had to do some digging to find out he just won the Australian Open. So.
Oh.
They call them Bads.
They're looking Australian dudes, so I wanted to interview them.
Okay. Don't you just ask questions like, hey, you hitting them long and straight?
Yeah, or I could just do the proverbial one that most of the sideline people do. Are you here at the Honda Classic? Feel good?
Yeah. How's your game?
Talk about your wedge play.
Had a victory last week. That had to feel good.
How you doing with the flat stick?
Guys, Doug is always texting me D-picks at 4 a.m. Thanks to Soulard Twink. D.
Yeah, defense. Doug is, you know.
Oh. Yeah, we talked about that with hockey a little while ago. You tighten up the defense.
He knows I'm coaching, so he's always texting me defensive drills. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Doug.
Sure.
Move your feet.
Tigers, yeah. Defense.
Clap, clap, clap.
Defense. I think it's only two claps. Defense. Tigers,
They had a little scrum, didn't they? They had a little.
We have audio of that. The Plowhawk, Plow Bruin to you, has audio. Missouri just, they keep garnering positive headlines in the athletic world. Here is Missouri's coaching staff fighting Georgia's coaching staff on Saturday. Their basketball team is, and they played each other.
Right. Hit the lever, Plowsy.
And now we have a dust-up going on as the teams are going to the locker room. What's going on here? The teams head into the locker room, and now the coaches are going at it. Steve Shields and one of the coaches from Georgia, Shields from Missouri, and man, they're going at it. What's going on here? I didn't see what had happened. And I think it was Kent Davidson, Georgia's Dobo, and Steve Shields had to be separated. And now another Missouri coach is stepping in, and fingers being pointed. Mark Fox pushing his staff away and finally getting Georgia to the locker room. I didn't see what happened.
I think he oversold that a little bit. When you're listening and you hear, boy, the coaches are really going, don't you think they're fighting? They weren't fighting. They were yelling at each other.
They were trying to get at each other.
It's all over TMZ and Deadspin.
I know, like it was the biggest brawl in the history of basketball.
Yeah, and I have to say, I agree with you. When I saw that, I'm like, it was
next to nothing is what it was.
And then Kim Anderson and, what's the head coach's name?
Fox.
Fox at Georgia were shaking hands like within seconds of it.
Right, they were hugging each other. And to say, the coaches are really going at it. They were yelling at each other.
And since nobody knows who coaches either team outside of Columbia and Athens, and I'm not even sure people in Columbia and Athens necessarily know, they could say that and not be like, well, Mike Krzyzewski's not really involved, or, you know, Jibby Boeheim's not necessarily involved.
Here comes the nasal talk.
Well, I just said Jibby Boeheim.
Okay.
I think the best of that video, and you could hear it slightly towards the tail end, is the crowd with their bulldog chants. It was like when you watch the video and you hear it, it is uncontrollable, the amount of bulldog chants during the scuffle.
But I think the reason it got so much attention is that's something you don't see a lot of. Coaches getting into it, even if it's not brawling.
No, it started with players right at the end. A Mizzou guy, Geist, I think, got the rebound on the desperation three at the end of the half. And a big guy from Georgia also had his hands on the ball, and neither one wanted to let go of it.
But that really wasn't the issue. There was another guy. I couldn't identify any of these people, but another guy from Georgia came off the bench as they were exiting for halftime, and then he pushed guys from behind. That was actually, to me, the thing that got it going. Either way, we've just talked Missouri basketball for the first and last time until Kim Anderson's fired. All right, we got to take a break. At 9 o'clock, Mark Saxon, ESPN.com Cardinal reporter, and shot file video or video of the Cat coaching youth basketball this weekend. He is going to be with us at 9 o'clock. Plus, Hot Shots email today, the morning after at InsideSTL.com. A free Lemmings lunch from Hot Shots is the prize. We'll be at Hot Shots in Dorset for TMA Live on Thursday. And then Hot Shots in Fenton for our AFC-NFC Championship party. That is a week from Sunday. This is the Ryan Kelly Morning After.